You're listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Hey everyone, just a quick reminder that if you're going to be making any purchases on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, or Zazzle.com, please go to www.9to5.cc first and click the links in the sidebar or at the bottom of the page to support the site. It makes no difference to you, but it really helps us out a lot. Enjoy the show. Thanks. It's Friday in Montreal. We're at Oceaga, but we're still releasing a podcast.
Sure are.
Talking about movies that came out a week ago. This time, you watched the double feature of Man in the Orange Jacket.
A Man in the Orange Jacket.
And?
The Seventh Code.
The Seventh Code.
That's right.
And I did not watch any of these films, So tell me what they're about, John.
Okay, so The Man in the Orange Jacket is a Russian thriller, suspense, bit of a gore kind of a movie. Mm-hmm. And The Seventh Code is a tale of an Asian schoolgirl following her love across from Japan into Russia and getting a little bit lost. Which, you'd think there would be a lot more Russian-Japanese crossover stories, given as their countries are side-by-side, and they've been going to war over a little island for the last 50 years.
Yeah, but isn't Japan, the part of Japan that like basically touches Russia is Siberia, so there's not really people there. Like, I feel like that Russia exists, like, as a frozen wasteland, and then populated Russia is really far away from Japan.
I think there are populated areas near there, but
regardless, it's like... I'm sure there's villages and stuff, but I feel that there's not that much, like, Russian culture that, like, permeates the border on Japan.
You might be right. I don't know enough about this to disagree with you either way. So, let's go a little
bit... Orange Jacket.
Yeah, Orange Jacket. So, here is the story. There's a creepy guy in an orange jacket. He walks into who'd have thunk? He walks into a incredibly posh, opulent mansion, and murders this older man and his young, attractive lover. I don't know how much detail I want to go into past that.
Okay,
that's like the start. The first 5 minutes of this opening, it's like a graphic murder.
And so what's the payoff? Is it like just? Is it like a psycho killer movie? Is it like a thriller? Is it like he's stalking?
It's definitely supposed to be on the suspense side of the equation, rather than being. It's like it's not. There are other murders, but it's not a slasher.
Okay.
There's like little hints of American Psycho involved in here with the upper crust and murdering for the sake of having something to do with your time and just like hints of that. But I think unfortunately the film didn't maintain the tension required to keep a thriller. To keep you going in a straight thriller. So there's like long shots with the droning music that would like keep you in if the tension was there. But I found that the tension was not there.
It seems like that could have really paid off really well. Like if there's a place where I think of like rich people who might just like run around killing fucking
for funsies,
poor people for funsies, it would be like
Russia. Yeah.
It'd be Russia.
Yeah, for sure, for sure, for sure. Like it was so close. And his orange jacket getup that's like a worker. And he carries around this big, like, toolbox that's, like, one of those old-timey, like your grandpa used to have that he probably made himself. Like, a wooden, open-topped with, like, a bar handle on it, you know? And then he would, like, take out the different tools.
It's my toolkit.
Depending on who he was going to, you know, depending on what tool he needed, you know, to kill somebody. So that element was fantastic. But as you, like, got into the backstory of the character and his life and whatever, it just took a little too long to go there. And so I found myself a little bit bored.
Which is crazy because you said this has, like, a runtime of, like, under an hour.
Yeah, it was under an hour. Like, but, it wasn't a big story. It was very small. There weren't a lot of characters. It focused a lot on just the one guy who is the man in the orange jacket.
I'm just saying, like your gripes, like they sound like, oh, that like makes sense if it's an hour and a half. But you think that they maybe could have, like, at 45 minutes, they maybe could have like either extended some of the kills,
or shortened it up, a
little bit, or whatever. Like,
I'm not really sure. I think it was still fun, and I found myself pondering this while watching it. Like in Russia, they must make the most freaking hardcore, kick-ass thriller movies, and we just don't see them. Like Russia has a really long tradition of cinema, and
really must come out.
I feel they must too. Why don't we ever see them? I feel like I want to do some investigation. This film has, like, spurred me to want to investigate Russian cinema.
Investigate Russian cinema.
Yeah.
But, we know about Serbian cinema.
Yeah, we know all about Serbian cinema, but we don't know about Russian cinema. Anyway, like, in terms of just, like, seeing what Russia's up to with thrillers, this is, like, a fun movie. I don't know if I would recommend it, like, unless you're, like, into horror movies and thrillers in general. Mm-hmm. Like, and if you are, you'll get a kick out of this, seeing the different ways they play on it. The sets that they use in the mansions are fantastic. They're, like... The prostitute chicks that show up are just delightful. But the, like, the overall payoff, I wouldn't recommend it past horror aficionados.
Okay. Seventh Code.
Seventh Code. So, in this one...
Another loosely Russian film.
Which I'm assuming is the reason they were paired. Mm-hmm. So, this Asian-Japanese girl is in Japan. She has this little encounter with a Japanese businessman.
Okay.
Where she flirts with him, they get drunk together. It's not super clear what exactly the nature of it was. And then he goes to Russia to do some kind of business, and she just, like, follows him because she's a crazy crushing schoolgirl. Crushing in Russia. So
what?
She ends up in Russia, doesn't know anybody, doesn't speak Russian, like, finds this guy, flags him down, runs over, and is like, remember me? And he's like, no. And she's like, we got drunk together at the blah, blah, blah restaurant, and then we had fun, and then all my friends were there. And he's like... Yeah, well, have a nice day. like he's just totally trying to get rid of her.
Uh-huh.
And then she follows him around while he's doing some kind of super, super shady business with a bunch of Russian mobsters.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really good twist at the end, which I'm not going to spoil at all,
because
it gets way cooler than I'm making it out to be. But the bulk of the film is her kind of struggling with life in Russia, where she doesn't speak... It's like a very poor part, because it's in the far east of Russia.
Yeah.
Doesn't know anybody. She runs into this Chinese girl who happens to speak Japanese working at a failing Asian restaurant. Mm-hmm. And they, like, become friends. And she starts working there and tries to, like, make her way. All the while, like, she sees his car on the street and chases on foot after the car to try and, like, flag him down and, like, rekindle the relationship. So it's, like, very weird. and, like, you're like, what am I watching the whole way through it? And then it twists at the end and you're like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Okay.
Which I'm not going to do until we spoil. But but again, it was only like an hour long. This was like a mini movie, and delightful.
Fun.
Yes. Let us spoil these things.
These are the spoilers.
All right.
So was the Asian girl an assassin?
The Asian girl was an assassin. Actually, not quite an assassin. You were close. She was more of a thief.
Okay.
The deal was the guy was doing some kind of shady business to steal nuclear... guidance chips or nuclear, something involving nuclear weaponry that the Asian guy was buying from Russian people and was going to bring back to Russia. She kills him, takes the guidance chips, hops on a car to go sell them, and then rides off into the sunset.
Okay.
And then for some reason, and this I did not understand whatsoever, she gets blowed up while riding off into the sunset.
Has the guidance chips?
No, she had the guidance chips on her. Like, and then she was getting chased by these guys, and then they took a pot shot or two at her while she was in the back of a truck. And then the truck was carrying dynamite by chance, so it got blowed up, and I assume she got blowed up also. And that's the end of the movie.
Nobody wins, like, Russia.
What? Like, and then credits. Yeah. You know, so it was like really weird at the end. But she has a fight that... You remember when I was complaining a little bit about Kite? How little Asian girl has to beat up like a giant, like a fully grown man.
And it's just
like so silly.
Yeah.
She has a fight where it was like almost believable. She used a lot of like grappling techniques that you could almost see somebody getting away with.
Like a Zangief?
No. It's definitely not a Zangief guy. The guy she fights is the Asian dude. So he's like, you know, he's like, has like the slim Asian man build, but she's like tiny.
Okay.
You know, but if in a grappling scenario, it's like the only way I could see a little girl beating a bigger guy.
Okay.
Anyway, whatever. Like, the fight was all right. But really, like, that was a tiny portion of the film. The bulk of it was just her struggling with her situation, which was fun to watch in and of itself.
Cool.
Orange Jacket.
Do you like watching girls struggle, John?
In Russia? So, the man in the orange jacket. It's not even a twist. Like, it's revealed pretty early on that the first two murders, the older man and the woman, the man in the orange jacket is their son.
Okay.
Or the old man's son. The mother is a stepmother. Like, the woman is a stepmother who is, like, the trophy wife of the super rich father.
Okay.
Right? So, he murders the two of them while in this outfit there, and then it cuts back in time, which you don't really realize until later, that he's just, like, getting drunk in this giant mansion, hiring hookers and pretending to kill them in his head, and just, like, indulging in all of these fantasies. Mm-hmm. And then, finally, the fantasies come to a head, and he kills his dad and his mistress.
Okay.
That's the whole.
So it just sort of like it messes with the time, I guess, a little bit.
It's a what?
Did you say it like messes with the time?
It does. It does. It jumps back and forth between like the present, which is like the killing of the father, and the past, which is
his fantasies.
Him like indulging in his fantasies more and more, and losing touch with reality, just like constantly getting hammered all by himself in this gigantic mansion, and it's like very very small in scope. Tiny little story, just like the points of tension in the film. There's like three or four of them. You know, when he goes out to a very fancy restaurant to eat, and then he's all by himself there, and he just like gets drunk at the table by himself. He doesn't know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. He has no friends. That's like a point of tension that like would have been one stop, you know, on the train of the movie. And each of these has to carry the tension. Otherwise, you get deflated and you don't know what you're doing. You know. So like the next one is where he's got the two prostitutes that he calls over, and he's like. They're kind of making fun of him. He gets way too drunk, and then they're like kind of like laughing at him, whatever, and then he's like fantasizing murdering him. You know, so like that was good. And then there was another section that didn't quite carry. Like you got it and then you lost it. And then you got it and then you lost it. And so ultimately
was it performance related, or was it more just like weird
pacing? No, the guy's performance was outstanding. The main character was on the screen for like easily 95% to 98% of the actual time that there were shots on the screen, and he had this really great like big heavy body with like a little bit of a baby face, and also that still has that like Russian hardness to him.
Okay.
It was an excellent. I don't know if it was just he happened to look good or whatever, but or if it was the perfect body language. But I really did like the choice of the actor and his performance.
Cool.
Likewise, the two prostitutes are the ones who have the most screen time other than him out of any of the characters in the film, and they're like. Almost identical twins, but you can tell that they're not when their makeup gets a little washed off when they're in the swimming pool, but like still very well done. But anyway, like again, if you're into thriller movies, man, check this out because it's just interesting to see what Russia's up to.
Did they explain a little bit why they were packaged together? I meant to ask if this is sort of like.
I think it was just the Russian connection. They both take place in Russia.
Okay. I was wondering if after this fact they'll be together in like on DVD or whatever.
No, I doubt it. I don't think
they're not like related by filmmakers.
No, it's possible. But the book didn't seem to indicate so, and nobody said anything at the start of the thing.
Cool.
So that was it.
All right.
Coming up next, Starry Eyes, which is a bit of a thriller dealing with life in Hollywood.
I guess time lapse.
What do you mean?
Time lapse. What do you mean? The film we're going to talk about.
Time lapse.
The film time lapse that premiered at Fantasia a couple days ago.
Coming up next.
Yay.
Hey guys, it's me again. Just a quick reminder, 9to5.cc is a fan-made, fan-supported website. That means we don't have any sort of an advertising budget. The only way we really have to get our name out there is by our fans sharing us, liking us, and supporting us. So if you enjoy what we're doing, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, we're there. Tell your friends that this podcast is happening, then it's a lot of fun. Also, if you like what we're doing, we do have a podcast for the rest of the year, John and I, called 9to5 Entertainment System that we do with the other founders of the sites, Scott and Sophie, and we also have another podcast that we do through the rest of the year called Go Plug Yourself, for myself and Walter J. Ling, talk to people that have interesting stuff coming up in Montreal. So once again, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, we're on both of them. If you see us at the festival, come say hey, and keep listening and keep enjoying the show. We're going to try to keep having episodes pretty much on a daily basis. Fantasia's been so great so far, so I'm done. Here we go. Thanks for listening.
9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you? Thanks for listening.